You know, this concept of honor isn't just for kids. It's for all of us, even as adults. We could all benefit from growing in this area of honor. One dad came to us after we were sharing this honor concept to a group. He said, you know, this is great. I'm going to use this at work tomorrow morning. And it was just so exciting that he could take this idea of honor and use it with adults in his office. It's something that we all need. We can all grow when we think about treating people as special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude. Those are success principles for life. They make us better employees. They make our kids better students, better friends. It really creates treasures in relationships when we learn how to honor.
You know, many parents work hard to teach their children obedience. And obedience is important to learn. But you know, children have two parts of their job description in life. Their job description isn't only to learn how to obey. Their job description is also to show honor. I love to talk to kids about this whole concept of honor. Are they helping to solve problems, or are they just whining about them? How can we help children to grow in this area? We want them to understand that honor just changes the whole dynamic. Honor will help children to be better friends. Honor will help children to do better at school, because honor gets children outside of themselves, you see. When children are showing honor, they're less self-absorbed. They're thinking more about other people. They're looking for ways to add energy to the situation. That's what honor does. We want our children to learn how to show honor. We want to teach it in our family. And when we teach other children to honor other people, we're contributing in some significant ways to their conscience. We're saying you have a responsibility to care about others. It's part of your obligation in what you're trying to do.
Let's just talk about that second part of the honor definition for a minute, doing more than what's expected. Another way we can teach that is to teach children to take an honor look. Maybe you send your son into the living room to clean things up, and when he comes back, he says, I finished the job. You'll send it back and say, okay, now take an honor look. Well, what does that mean? It means doing more than what's expected. Find one extra thing. We want to teach our children to think outside the box, not just doing the bare minimum. But what's an extra thing you can do? How can you make that room look even better by doing one more thing? So we send kids back in to take an honor look.
Let's look at another parenting strategy that has to do with this caring about others. And that is to equip children to take initiative. How can we get children to take initiative for themselves? A very important parenting strategy, because I find that parents get themselves in between and they become the initiator for the child. One family told us this story. They said, we told our son he could have a dog. He's 12 years old, that he could have a dog if he would take care of the dog. He said, that'd be great. I'd love to take care of the dog. I said, great. You know what that means, right? That means you feed him every day, you provide him with the water that he needs, and you take him out to do his business whenever he needs that to happen. And you clean up his messes in the backyard, in the house, or whenever they come, right? You understand that? Yes, I understand that. Okay, great. Well, the problem they were having now was that the dog would come to the door and start whining to go out to do his business, and the 12-year-old wouldn't know that, wouldn't recognize it. Mom would say, your dog needs to go out. And he would say, oh, okay. And then he would go ahead and do it. It wasn't as if he was being rebellious. He wasn't being resistant. It's just he didn't see it. He needed to see it. He needed to take initiative. That's what Mom and Dad wanted. They wanted him to take initiative for himself and not just wait for Mom to initiate or Dad to initiate to tell him to do it. So we suggested, all right, what is the cue, Mom, that you see that's in the environment that tells you that the dog needs to go out? And she said, well, he goes by the door and he whines. Okay, well, what we want to do is we want to try to get the cue in the environment attached to your son. Instead of you being in the middle and trapped in the middle, always being the conscience for your child, let's connect the two. So instead of saying to your son, you need to take the dog out, he's whining by the door, why don't you say this? I hear something. What you're trying to do is get your child connected to the cue in the environment. Pull yourself out a little bit so your child can take initiative. I find that many parents get trapped into this place of being in the middle. Being in the middle, always prompting their child, and what they really need to do is get out of the way. But first they need to equip their child to see the cue, whatever that cue is in the environment.
And that's hard. I think sometimes we get, as parents, we get so used to picking up on the cues, we don't even know what they are. We just know it's time to get the child by the door with his backpack. It's time to get the hairbrush, you know, whatever it is. But we forget. How do we know that? It's because we're looking at the clock. And so the clock is our cue, and then we give the instruction. What we're suggesting as parents, we need to step back and ask ourselves, what is the cue that's telling me to give an instruction? And how can I communicate that to my child so I'm no longer giving the instruction, but I'm somehow connecting my child to the cue? And that's going to take some work, some thinking on our part as parents, but do you see the long-term ramifications? Boy, if we could teach our children to be sensitive to the dog barking, to be sensitive to the clock on the wall, to be sensitive to the other cues in life, we'll be teaching them how to take initiative, to do the right thing, to care about others, to move forward in life, and not just be depending on us as external prompters, but to respond to that internal prompter that picks up on the cue.
Just a few weeks ago, we were teaching a parenting seminar, and one mom had a great idea. I told her, I said, that's a great idea. I'm going to share that with other people. What she did every evening is that she asked everybody in her family, including her husband, what random act of kindness did you do today? The implication was everybody in this family does random acts of kindness. We're always looking for something to do. I like that because what that's saying to everyone in the family is that's part of who we are. We're people that are adding energy to life. We're people that are taking initiative to help other people. We don't have to wait to be told to do these things. We're already doing them. We're looking for ways to pass information or to encourage someone or to help someone out. Random acts of kindness, not just done as extra things, but part of our duty in essence. I mean, that's what Jesus would have said when it comes to the knowing who your neighbor is and the Good Samaritan. We have a duty to be caring for other people. We have a responsibility to take initiative to help other people. That's part of what we need to do. The conscience helps prompt us in this very important area of taking initiative.
I think there are too many people in this world who just wait to let other people do whatever's necessary. They just leave the mess for somebody else to clean up. They leave the problem in somebody else's court to solve the problem. We want to train our children to take initiative, to be the problem solvers, to be the people who will care for others, to see what needs to be done, to jump in and solve the problem, to look for ways to help other people. That's a great gift we can give our children if we're teaching them to think that way in life.
When our youngest children, three of them, were all 9 years old, we were living in Africa at the time, and our children were attending the local school. And we were feeling uncomfortable as parents about what we were seeing inside of us because of the getting ready in the morning department. We were nagging our children. Come on, get ready. You need to get up there. School's going to start. And so we kept prompting them. And we didn't like what we were seeing. So my wife and I got together and decided we'd develop another strategy for dealing with morning time in our home. We found that we were being the consciences for our children, and we did not want to do that anymore. So we got our kids together, and we gave them each a gift. It was all wrapped, and when they opened it up, they discovered that we had given them an alarm clock. And we told them, you guys are 9 now. We're not going to have to wake you up anymore. In fact, you're going to have the privilege of sleeping as long as you want. You can decide when you want to set the clock. We'll help you set it. But you decide what time you want to get up in the morning. Here's what you need to do. Your first checkpoint in the morning is 7 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock, you need to have your bed made, you need to have your clothes on, and you need to be down to breakfast. 7 o'clock, and we're using the clock in the kitchen. So you want to be down to breakfast at 7 o'clock to meet your first checkpoint. Your second checkpoint is 7:15. By 7:15, you have to be finished with your breakfast, have your teeth brushed, your hair combed, and your backpack by the door so that you can get out the door at 7:20. That's what needs to happen. And we said to our children, you know, you can decide what time you want to get up. And so we let that happen. What we tried to do is move ourselves out of the way and let the clock influence our children, get them connected. It all worked great. And they received it well until the next morning when we hear the alarm clocks going off at all kinds of early hours in the morning. What are they doing, we wondered. But in the end, it worked because we connected our children to the clock. Isn't that the prompter that we listen to or we look at many times, and then we pass it on to our children? What we're trying to do, or what we tried to do in that situation, was get our children connected to the prompter. We want them to take initiative, not wait for parents to be prompting them along.
This is such an important area of the conscience to be working on, helping children to care about others, to even think about the needs of other people, to be able to honor others, to take initiative. We're really equipping our children with some valuable tools for the rest of their lives so they're not so self-focused, so they're not so selfish, they're not only concerned about their own needs, but they begin to see the needs of other people and they can step in and do something about it.
Let's talk about another theology. Let's talk about the theology of man or the theology of humanity. When we study the scriptures and try to understand what makes up a person, we see that God created man different than the animals. He gave man a heart. Now, if we're going to help people change or we're going to help work with people, that means we're going to treat people, our children in particular, different than we treat animals. But you know, some people just use behavior modification in the same way that you would train animals or trying to train their children. Now, I just want you to know, behavior modification does work in some ways. But God has given us a vastly different way to reach our children, and that is to touch them on a heart level. How can we reach our children's hearts? See, once we understand our theology about people, it means that we're going to work with our children in a little bit different way. We're going to try to connect with them on a heart level. The conscience is a very real part of that in our children's lives. We want to help them do that. So now, if we're going to build a heart of compassion, not just do kind things, but we're going to develop the actual heart of compassion, what is that going to look like? Well, it's going to have two different components. Both of those components come together to make compassion or a heart of compassion inside of a child.
The first component is to teach children about empathy. Empathy is the ability to feel what another person is feeling, to understand the emotions of another person. Many of our children struggle with that. They're not very empathetic. They may not even understand their own emotions. They certainly don't know how to feel what another person is feeling. And so we want to help them develop empathy in their life so they can begin to see how other people feel how other people feel, and they can see even how their own actions affect other people. So that empathy becomes very important. Now, there's some different ways that we can teach that. Certainly, we want to teach children to observe what they see around them. We may ask a child a question about three basic emotions: sad, mad, and glad. It's just a great place to start. Maybe the child has been interacting with their brother, and then you ask the child a question. When that happened, was your brother sad, mad, or glad? How did you know? This is a great question for children because they often have no idea how the other person was feeling. And they may be involved in the situation, they just took their brother's toy. Maybe they were uninvolved, but they just heard the brother do something, saw the brother do something, and now we can step into that situation. Was your brother sad, mad, or glad? How did you know? What could you do about it? So we want to help our children understand that other people have feelings, and if we can tune into them, that can develop that empathy in us so we can learn to care about others.
But a heart of compassion contains more than just feeling. It's more than just pity. Compassion also has an action component, that we don't just feel sorry for someone, but we do something about it. So we want to teach our children to, when they have that prompting from the conscience that says, care about someone else, they need to do something about it. It started as a kind gesture, but turned into a great story. Let me tell you about Bill. Because Bill, at 12 years old, overheard at church that a woman, an older woman, was going to get her phone turned off. She didn't have the money to pay for it, and then she wouldn't be able to communicate with her children and her grandchildren around the country. The bill was $74.16. Well, Bill said, Mom, could we pay for that money? Could we give her that money? Mom says, well, what did you have in mind? Well, Bill went and looked in his stash of money, and he only had about $20. But he went to a couple of friends of his, and together they were able to gather the $74.16. So Bill came back to Mom and said, Mom, could you call the lady and tell her that we want to pay her bill? Well, Mom called the pastor and got the contact information for the lady and called the lady up, but her phone was already disconnected. Bill said, "Mom, could we drive over to her house?" So they all piled in the car. Mom and the three friends piled in the car and they went over to the lady's house. Bill knocked on the door, and when the lady came to the door, Bill said, "We're from the church and we knew you needed some money for your phone bill, so we wanted to help pay your bill, so here's the money." The lady said, "Come on in." And when the lady opened up the envelope, she was, you might have thought she won $1 million. She just started crying. She couldn't believe it. And she was so surprised that someone that she hardly knew would care for her in that particular way. Now, I want to tell you, when those people, that mom and Bill and his two friends left that house, they didn't need a reward because of what they'd done. There was this internal satisfaction that they'd done the right thing. It's so powerful. When you focus on the conscience, good things happen.
Sometimes we have to require children to take initiative, and sometimes it just flows. Either way, help your children see that God has placed within their hearts a conscience. And when they learn to respond to it, then they'll be much more effective as a friend, as a student, as a member of the family.
One mom wrote to us and told us about how honor was changing her family. She said, "Not only are my children more respectful, but they're also going the extra step to honor other family members. Ashley made her bed this morning without being asked, and then she wanted to make our bed too. She also made Alex's breakfast this morning. Austin helped Alex change his clothes and get buckled into the car seat. They did all of this without being asked. Wow, what a blessing."
It's fun to watch families change with this concept of honor. You see, it's not something that comes from the outside, it's something that comes from the inside. And when we teach our children how to care for others, they begin to catch this vision. It's self-perpetuating in the home. Have fun with this concept. Come back next time and share some stories about ways that honor is changing your family.